Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Today's video is brought to you by Predictable Revenue's service LinkedIn Outbound. Find out how we can leverage and grow your existing LinkedIn network to book meetings into your calendar at the link below. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by George McGarren. He's the founder at the McGarren Group, and we're talking about how George gets his customers to pay him to market to them. George, welcome to the show.
Colin, how you doing? It's good to catch up with you again. How are you?
I'm good. The kids are sleeping right now. They're just in they're next door, so hopefully they won't be making too much noise on this episode, but we certainly have had a few, especially we just did a live stream week before with a, I don't know, 500 people on at one point, and the kids were just banging on the door. They're like, they could hear me, and I'm like, yeah.
Well, there's a Murphy's Law. I'll bet you a dollar right now if you want. We can do Canadian dollars or U.S. dollars, whatever you want to do. But there's probably going to, your kids will interrupt you by the time we're finished. So,
oh, for sure. So talk to me about this idea that you've got, you get your customers to pay to market to them. And you mentioned that it was actually a mistake turned into a business model. So can you walk me through how these two ideas work together?
Right. So I started out like anybody else. I had this one core business, right? It was sort of a very high, I run an executive placement firm. So we do search, right? So I've got, on my team, I've got 30 people. I'm either, number one or number 30, right? But there's 30 of us. Primarily, we're dealing with guys that are making, let's say, $300,000 a year to $4 or $5 million, right? So that's an important part of the second business. So we do executive search. Clients all over the place in terms of industry, geography, revenue. And quite frankly, it's candidates, right? We're dealing with candidates and dealing with organizations. That business has now been, it's going on 20 years, right? So for the first 10 years, literally for 10 years, I had candidates say, "Hey, George, I need some help with a resume or a biography, or there might be a board role. Can you help me with the resume?" And I would, and this was the mistake number one. I was like, "Well, it's not really sexy. I'm not going to do that. Nah, I don't know anybody. It's not our thing." And that was it. And there's a movie. Have you seen that Jim Carrey movie? Yes, when he says yes to everything. Have you seen that movie?
Yes, Man, or something like that.
Yeah. I was watching this movie. And I'm thinking, you know what, maybe I'll just do a little, Jim Carrey sort of like trial and error, right? So literally like next day, I get this question, "Hey, George, I need this resume, blah, 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 blah. Can you do it?" And I was thinking, definitely not. But it's, "Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do the resume for you. We'll get the resume done." And so we worked, and he was a CEO of a company. We charged him some like crazy, absurd, global, sort of amount. I just didn't even know what to charge for it. He ended up CEO of another company later on with the resume that we did for him. And he called me back. He's like, "Hey, George, listen, I want to say thank you. The awesome resume that you guys did for me, I got this crazy, role and I'd like to, we had, I'm not going to name the competitor, we had another retained search firm in here. We're probably going to get rid of them. Or do you want the $500,000 of business? Just tell me, I'll get you set up with, so-and-so." And, literally a week later, Colin, I had a check for $250,000, right? That was like the light bulb that went off. He then said, "I have a buddy of mine who has the same problem. Can you do his resume?" Right. And, little by little, it turned into, we realized that 25%, now 25% of our revenue stream on the recruiting side comes from the relationship that started on the branding side, right? So if I work with an executive, a CMO at a company one-on-one, or he works with somebody or she works with somebody on our team, later on, a lot of times we either place them or they become clients of ours. And that's, it's sort of, in theory, they're paying us and to kind of market to them, right? And it's not even a ploy. It's a win-win for them because we're telling the story properly for them, and they're getting a business partner, right? And at the end of the day, Colin, like, you do business with people you like, and you do business with people you trust, and it's much more powerful than any other kind of marketing tool you can think of. And it's literally, you have access one-on-one with the decision maker of some of these companies. Do $100 billion in revenue. And it's I'm not a trained marketer, but there's some natural things that happen. And it's been, I mean, we're now trying to think of a third or fourth business that will kind of fit into that because the model works. And we're adding value to the customer, right? Which is the person that we're targeting, right?
It's so beautiful. I just want to pause. And if you're listening, I want you to pause and just think about this, and feel free to pause the episode if you want, and just ask yourself, what are the things in your sales process, in your business that you're saying no to that you might be able to either charge for or just do for free, give away for free to start that relationship? I've heard a lot of people in the marketing space refer to this as like a tripwire product, right? So if your main product is, you know, call it $30,000, well, to just start a relationship with somebody and then sell them something worth $30,000, or in George's case is $500,000, right? That's a long sales process. But there's the consistency theory, which is along the lines of, I'm gonna butcher it, but if you want to check it out, it's Robert Cialdini's work, book is Influence, where he talks about it. I'm not sure if it's his theory. I'm pretty sure it's not his theory, but he made it pretty clear in there. But basically, once you've already done one action for an individual, so the example he gives is with the tripwire product, once you've already bought something, consistency theory dictates that you're more likely to want to buy from that company again because you've already bought from them before and it was a good experience. And so how do you build something like that into the beginning of your sales process? And I'm going to pass it back to George here because you're competing with some very large companies, and I'm curious how this impacts your marketing in that environment.
Well, it's a great question. And by the way, I mean, this is not something that we hide with our customers. I mean, sometimes they'll say, George, you know, you've got this recruiting company and search firm. Why are you messing around with a $2,000 or $3,000 product? Right. And they know the fees involved on the other side. And I tell them, I say, listen, I'm more focused on a relationship than a transaction. So if that's not really what you need, then also it doesn't make sense to have me maybe hire somebody else that can do the executive branding for you. The way we compete is, I mean, it's one word, it's well, two words. I would say, you know, it's influence and it's relationships. And, I mean, I don't know, Colin, do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yep. Yeah. I got a little brother.
Yeah. So let's say your little brother runs an executive recruiting firm and who would you give the business to? You give it to your brother, assuming that all things are equal, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know your brother well, but let's say he's, you know, super talented, or, you know, just as you, like you are, then you'd give it to your brother. In general, people give, you know, people deal with people and they give it to people they like and they trust. And it's exactly what you're saying. Did this really well? American Express Ameriprise, the financial advisors, years ago, they would say, hey, listen, Colin, come into my office, right? We'll do a whole financial kind of, review for free. I think they were charging $1,000. And folks say, yeah, I'll pay $1,000 to get this awesome picture about if I'm good to go or what's going on and where I can save. And then they would flip it to, hey, you know, let's talk about your long-term plan. Let's talk about how many kids do you have? Let's talk about if you're protected. They did a really good job of that. You see that in a lot of businesses. I mean, some businesses in the marketing world call it loss leaders. We're now at a point where it's not a loss leader for us, but we're competing on influence and relationships. I mean, there's no question. It's like, I don't know. There's a point where you can't give Frisbees out. You can't give coffee cups out. Like, they don't care about visors, right? Hey, Colin, like, you know, we work together. Can I help you? Can I not help you? And it's that simple.
It totally fair. I can't remember whose idea it was, but years ago I heard somebody talk about, you know, your sales process should be good enough that your customer should be willing to pay for it. And it's sort of a similar idea. And we've been working on this at Predictable Revenue. We've been building this like quick consult. So many people come to us with questions and like, hey, I'm curious about this, curious about that. And it's so hard to answer deep questions or say, okay, let's plan out this big coaching engagement in the sales process when there's so many people involved. And you could turn what should be like a 2-3 call sales process into, you know, 15 calls for a fairly small project, right? And at the end of the day, it might not make sense to waste everybody's time on both sides of the table. And so we flipped it and said, okay, let's, right, taking some of your advice and said, okay, let's do a very small consult that it's kind of a last leader. We're probably coming out even on it, if I'm honest, where we come in and we say, okay, this is, you know, here are all the things, but it's tremendous value. It's a, you know, we're looking at your sales loft, your sales force, your outreach, your data, how all those tools work together. And you get this pretty you know, Skookum report that says like, here's where the gaps are. Here's the things we're missing. Here's the things where you need to improve. And if you can do that, you can probably get a X multiple on your SDRs, right? And it's like, oh, and by the way, here's the link to like all the podcasts and here's all the information, like go do it yourself. Or if you don't want to do it yourself, come, we can do it for you.
Right. And it's, I mean, you get to a point where there's sort of a symbiotic relationship, right? Where, you know, I need you, you need me. And it's like, who are you going to call? You're going to call Colin, right? And it also gives you the awesome opportunity to become the subject matter expert, right? Because they see the work. They see the 4:30 a.m. email that they got from you. They see some of the work ethic as well. They see that you show up on time to the calls. It's like you're constantly, you're able to constantly show them your value more than just, you know, just a one sort of like a sales meeting where, you know, a bunch of drinks and dinner, and then it's like, okay, please use us. Right. The proof is in the pudding, right. And you get to show that I can tell you in terms of an economy, this is what I would recommend for business owners out there, especially like the executive branding business for us, it's pretty recession proof. Like if the economy does well, then it brings in, you know, tons of cash flow. If it doesn't do well, it's still like the economy's not doing well, it still brings in money. So if you're a business owner, if you can think about, okay, what's the second or third or fourth service I can use, that's semi recession proof, so that if, you know, the big business doesn't, you need a business that can finance the bigger business just in case, so that you can, you know, you might have to I learned already from 2008, 2009, but executive placement is pretty much dead until July, August, right? It's on hold, right? So, you know, for now, our branding business is financing our recruiting business, right? It's fine. So if you can think about that, something that is semi-recession proof, lower amounts of money, it still creates need and value. And later on, it's also a great opportunity for follow-up. Like I can call you, Colin, say, listen, I just want to make sure everything was cool with the branding part. By the way, how are things going at, you know, I don't know, the Fortune 100 company for you, right? So it's a great, it gives you a reason to follow up as well. You just have more reasons.
Totally. And like we're talking about, there's so much value. I think the idea is there's so much value front loaded in that. You're not trying to like make a huge margin. You're trying to get as many people through the door as you can and still make a reasonable margin. You're not giving it away for free, I don't assume. It's not the freemium model.
No, it's, I mean, to be that business turned into, I mean, sort of a mistake turned into business model. It's a seven figure business, right? So, you know, it was just initially it was free, or, you know, it was like just crazy, like $200 off or $300. It was the first time we did it 10 years ago. But it's a seven figure business, right? So it's, you know, that, I mean, I think a lot of people would like to have just a seven figure business as like a side hustle, right? Where it's like, hey, it's not really my core business. But it's turned into a seven figure business. I mean, it's I didn't really take it seriously until about 6 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, okay, let me just start focusing on, and that's when we started to really grow it. Because I kind of took it for granted as just it was just sort of there. But it's turned into a serious business. And later on, I think the plan will be to sell it for 5 to 7X, like eventually we're going to get up to a certain amount and then we're going to sell it. So
bringing it back to competing, you mentioned like for the executive search, you're competing against some really large companies. How do you market in that environment?
Stability. A lot of the larger executive search firms, they have a problem with turnover, right? With retention, where somebody that might call, and I don't know if you've seen this with sales. Have you ever dealt with Salesforce reps before?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like we use Salesforce, which for a 30-person company, we're not your typical Salesforce user, but we use, you know, we like Salesforce because of the dashboards. In the last, I don't know, 7 years, we must have 25 reps from Salesforce, right? Call us. So there's those companies have a problem with the retention. That's one piece. The second thing is just everything comes down to relationships. That very high level where people have to sort of give you 50% up front before they even start a project where you're retained. It's very much like a legal, like sort of a law firm, right? Where you go with a lawyer that you trust. There's so many large law firms out there, but there's also some boutique firms out there. So, you know, it's most of our recruiting clients as well come from referral, right? And we sent an email out to everybody in March when the coronavirus thing sort of got, you know, just lots of press, saying, listen, if you need anything from us, and it wasn't a sales thing, it was just a genuine, if you need anything from us or anybody in your family needs anything from us, please shoot us an email and we'll see what we can do, right? I guarantee you that my competitors did not do that. You know, they were focused on some sales deal, but they're not worried about the family members of their clients. And I think that's how we compete.
It's beautiful. And talk to me about the role that Outbound plays in your growth strategy.
We're big. I mean, I'm a big fan of outbound, you know, marketing and creating, you know, some sort of funnel, right? We're big on, we love technology. And I love automated processes. And I mean, I know like you built a career on this, right? Where, but I'm a big fan of, and are you a fan of, do you ever read James Clear, The Atomic Habits? Do you know that guy?
I haven't read his book.
Okay. He's got a book called Atomic Habits. He comes out, his blog, if you're an entrepreneur, is awesome. It's once a week. And he always comes up with like three or four tips. But one of the things that came out, I think it was like a couple months ago, which kind of epitomized, it's kind of like what we do, summarize what we do. It was like automate, delegate, pause, or eliminate, right? And that's pretty much how you should run your business. We're big on that whole continuous improvement. And like, you know, your business is like that as well. You know, you call it predictable revenue. I love that to know. I mean, it's a math problem, right? I mean, that's how I see the way we run our business in terms of the math problem. But that's how we're running our business. On the outbound side, we're heavy on, you know, we text quite a lot of people, emailing, we use lots of different systems. Lots of phone follow-up, right? Lots of follow-up. We track how many follow-ups there are. Like we have a KPI, like we know exactly pretty much to the T, okay, this person needs, you know, 12 or 15 or this. So we track all of that. Literally, if you can track it, we track it. And I think that's a problem that small business owners don't do. They just don't track their numbers. We track everything.
And you mentioned that you treat the business like a math problem. So talk to me about that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if, I don't know if you agree with that philosophy, but everything is, I mean, I guess in big corporate talk, it's their KPIs, right? But you can know exactly what's going on by your business. And this is why I like the Salesforces of the world. I mean, you can see your dashboard. They're just indicators of what's going on. I'll break it down very simply. And this is for a candidate, for example, right? If you know that you sent out your, let's say you contacted 50 buddies, and of the 50 buddies, all 50 buddies sent your resume to another, to you know, internally to their HR person. And of the 50 resumes that were sent out, you know, you got 10 interviews, 10 phone interviews, and 10 phone interviews turned into three on-sites, and three on-sites turned into one job offer, right? You now know, okay, for every job offer, I need to send my resume to 50 buddies, right? And if you keep the math on that, eventually you'll come up with a number. So I think activity breeds activity. And the first question from the recruiting side, from the sales standpoint, for every business that I've ever run, I always look at those numbers and I try to understand. I mean, you can predict the math on it, right? And I think once you understand the math, there's always a margin of error. You can then you can scale your business, or then you can figure out, okay, this is what's missing. Let me fix and tweak and improve. But it's, to me, everything in business is a math problem. Like that's everything.
And so, can you talk to me about the math of how the two ideas work, the two companies work together, just in terms of if you can share some stats on, you know, the resume writing business and like how many of those do you do? We don't have to get into like, oh, the actual revenue numbers, but I'm curious about the ratio of, you know, we have, you know, is it 50, you know, we write 50 resumes and then one of them turns into a hire and then that one turns into a deal. Like what can you share there?
Right. So 25% of the people that we work with on the, if you want to call it the resume business, the branding business, right? 25% of the people that we work with, turn into either a placement on the recruiting side, right? Or they turn into a client of ours on the recruiting side, right? So we're in terms of fees, I mean, we're pretty much not touching anything that's less than six figures on a fee standpoint. So let's take a $3,000 product. There's, you know, every four people that we work with, right? $3,000 turns into a minimum of $100,000, right? So that's the math on that. So it's a pretty good, and the you know, going back to that, to acquire that customer, it's 50% of the branding customers we have come from a referral. So there's really no acquisition cost after a while. I mean, it's pretty, it's you know, our acquisition costs are pretty much, it's so, I mean, they're pretty low. But the model is one in four turns into a recruiting relationship, which then we're able to sort of optimize.
And talk to me about what is the involvement of your sales team look like? Like, do you do one of these resumes and then the salespeople are kind of following up with them? Do you just let them release them out into the wild and hope they come back eventually?
Right. So we're big on kickoff calls and final product is sort of when the project's over, we do a call as well. So we strategize. Our setup is, I mean, we're always in contact with the people that we're working with. So we tell you know, our clients right away, like, listen, hopefully, you know, later on, if you end up someplace else, we're probably going to, and we set it up pretty well. We tell them, listen, you know, if you end up someplace else, we're probably going to have a call about how we can work together on the business front. Right. And it's a win-win for them. Right. They want me, actually, I would say that's, to me, is a selling point. They know that I have a vested interest in them doing really well, right? Financially, you know, I'd like them to do well because that turns into the other things. So that's there's a lot of touch points, and there's people like right now, we've had people that we've worked with, you know, 6-7 years ago, maybe on the branding side, that have come to say, George, hey, like I've lost my job. My husband's lost, you know, his job. Can you help? And we're so quick to respond to that. It's all about relationships, Colin. All about relationships.
I muted myself there. No problem. It sounds like it's more of a, we've got this pool of individuals that are, we've done the resume service for, and it's like, I guess what I'm driving towards is like, do you have your sales team regularly following up with those individuals? I know you sort of seed the idea. Right. I'm curious what the follow-up yes. looks like.
Yeah. And on both sides, on the recruiting side, right? So when we look at candidates or we look at opportunities or we look at, maybe there's leads on the, I mean, we're constantly seeing who we know, right? It's cheaper, it's faster, and it's easier if you can just call up, you know, you can just call up people you know, and the clients on the recruiting side get better. You just get quicker service. So we're constantly dealing. I mean, it's not like, hey, you know, so you've paid us a bunch of money and then take care. It's not like that at all. I mean, it's completely opposite. And I would say, I mean, you talked about one of the first questions you'd asked, like, how do you compete with larger firms? Our touch points are much more than theirs. And secondly, it's almost like a family oriented, you know, like your local dentist, right? Where they care and we know the names of the kids and where their kids are going to school. It's not a people machine, right? It's like, I don't know. I mean, there's a question, like sometimes I get like, who's your avatar? Who's your typical client? Right. And I don't know if I personally like that question because, you know, they're people, right. And I see it as if you look at them as people and not maybe like a sales item or a revenue piece, or, hey, I was able to upsell or downsell, or, you know, I think as a business owner, you get to hang out for 20 years, like I've done, you know, so, and you get to stay in business.
Fantastic. George, really appreciate you coming on and sharing how you bring together like the two sides of your businesses or the two different businesses. I think it's a fascinating sort of view into, you know, how we can, as either sales leaders or sales folks, the types of questions that we can be looking for our customers to be asking that are kind of outside the normal realm of what we might be doing, but to create this opportunity. And so I wanted to have you on here because you're sort of a case study for listening to your customers and listening for those jobs to be done that they're, you know, whether or not they are directly related to your business.
Thank you. Thank you, Colin. No, I appreciate it.
Yeah. It's really like, yeah, it's fascinating. And like, if you're sitting here saying, I'm in sales, you know, like I'm not the founder. I don't have this sort of level of control. I'd argue that, you know, as the salesperson, you are as close to an entrepreneur as you can absolutely get. And if you've listened to the show, you've probably heard me talk about like slinging generators back in the day. Like, it doesn't have to be a product that you're selling. It could be a service. It could be the way that you are just offering to help, like size and scope things, with your customers. And it doesn't have to, like, it, when I was selling generators, I would help my customers size and scope for my competitors' products, because I would tell them, like, oh, I know that you need this, you know, make sure you avoid that piece there. And by doing so, I became this resource that people would always come to me because they knew I would give them an honest answer. And they knew that I knew my stuff on something that they didn't have a large amount of information on. And in a lot of the cases, you know, people talk about, oh, customers know a whole lot more. But at the same time, products have gotten a lot more technical. And so, yes, while they might be more, like, I think we went from, you know, 30 years ago where buyers knew very little, right? And then there's this acceleration where buyers suddenly knew, you know, 60-80% of whatever. But I almost worry or believe that we're getting to this place where the products are getting so complex that, and the amount of information needed to actually make all these products work together is, you know, more valuable. And so the amount that the customers know is actually shrinking compared to the total amount of knowledge that they do need to know. Now, they might feel like they know 100%, but I just love the way that you've kind of inserted yourself into that conversation and said, hey, you're struggling with this. There's a job to be done. That's a really early hook. That's going to, you know, you're actually going to help this person become your next customer, which I love. And so my question to the audience is, if you're in sales, where does this fit into your pipeline? Right? Who are your customers? What are the jobs that they are looking for help with? Just what are the things that they need help with outside of your product? It could be integrating one of your products. It could be integrating one of your competitors' products. It could be something that's sort of adjacent or in the space that you might not have, that you might have knowledge on that you could be helpful. Right? And I think so much of what's really fueling George's business here is that you're being genuinely helpful. You're actually landing these people jobs at a time when it's probably a pretty scary time in their life. Because they're in between jobs or looking for that next big job.
Right. And a great question. And if you're kind of at home and thinking, I don't know what else to offer. I mean, you could literally just ask your customer, like, hey, you know what I do? You know what we sell? You've dealt with me for a year or two or 6 months. How else can I help someone like you or another customer, right? Like, what would you recommend that we do? The customer will just tell you. I mean, you just have to be able to ask the question. And in general, I mean, people want to help. People like to help other people. You can literally just ask your customer, "Hey, what else should I be offering to people?" And they'll tell you. They'll say, "Listen, you know what, Colin? Like, the reason I like working with you is because you have this expertise. You should sell that, or you could offer it for as part of your service." The customer will literally tell you what they want. And I think that was the mistake turned into the business model for me. I wasn't smart enough to ask that question to my client or, you know, the customer. And I learned it just naturally because it happened to me. But I think, you know, if I could do it all over again, I would literally just ask my customer, like, hey, what else can I help you with? Or where do you think I could help you? They would have told me, you know, I mean, I sort of, you know, if I could do it over again, that's probably what I would change. So if you're a salesperson, you can literally, you know, just ask your customer as well.
Beautiful. Great place to leave it there, George. Thank you so much for coming on the show. One last piece. I always like to give people a chance to promote themselves in the most cold call or in the most sales podcast way possible. So this is my favorite segment, the cold call. So talk to me about who you're typically selling to. And I understand you probably don't do a ton of cold calling these days. I bet you have a team to do that. So before we jump in, talk to me about who you're calling. Like, what is my role? What type of company am I working at?
So you would be, let's say you would be a CMO at a Fortune 500 company, right? Who makes probably, the assumption is you probably make $300,000, $400,000, maybe $500,000 a year, right? That'd be the assumption. And the other assumption is you've probably been there for 5 to 7 years, which means you know that you're underpaid. All your buddies are moving around making more money. You know that. And you probably haven't done a resume or LinkedIn or anything for 5 to 7 years, right? Because you've been busy running a business. So that's kind of the typical person that we work with initially.
Cool. Just on a side note, I find it hilarious that like CEOs are putting together resumes. I thought they would have something, you know, so much more. They would just be like, oh, it's the name. Oh, do you know Jack? Yeah. Oh yeah. Do you know Sarah? Yeah, 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 for sure.
Well, you know what? That's a great point. You say that. So a lot of the CEOs they're looking for the next roles. Here's the problem is everyone's coming referred, right? So every CEO that they're seeing is coming referred, right? So it's not like they're going online saying, hey, let me put an ad on Indeed for a Fortune 100 CEO, right? But they're literally going through a referral process. So it's, you know, they show up with a biography, a CV or resume. The LinkedIn has to be polished. A lot of times they're looking for board roles as well. So that's the reason. They're trying to very quickly, you know, like it's you versus five other people that are also there because they were referred. So it's not like, it's not as easy, I guess, as there's more than one person involved. So that's why they need it. It's all of them are referred. And that's the problem.
Gotcha. So this is something that helps them kind of stand out and above. Right. Cool. Hilarious sidebar. I just kind of assumed, resumes were only for us peasants and then everybody else at the... Cool. All right. So let's get to the cold call. So I'm a CMO at a fairly large company, Fortune 500 company, making a few hundred thousand dollars a year, been there 5 to 8 years. Yeah. All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Colin, hey, this is George from the McGarren Group. Reason for my call is that we brand executives for actually 90% of all Fortune 500s who are in the range from $300,000 to about $4 or $5 million a year. I took a look at your LinkedIn profile and like without doubt, you're leaving lots of opportunities of not only money, but just networking opportunities on the table. You have 3 minutes today to talk about how I might look for you.
Very convincing. I'm just about to head into a meeting though.
Yeah. So I'm happy you're busy, right? So how are you? Let's talk about tomorrow, you know, tomorrow, next day. What is your schedule like? Do you have your calendar in front of you?
Let's do it tomorrow.
Tomorrow, 3 o'clock. Awesome. I'll call you at the same time. Appreciate it, bud. Thanks, Colin.
Right on. Anyway, George, thanks so much for coming on the show. That was great. For somebody who hasn't done a cold call, there's a nice opening. You kind of go like the steamroll route, like just going to get the value out. In this context, you probably have a bit of a referral. I bet you know somebody there already. So you probably name dropping that if we're actually doing this live.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's you have to have some sort of, you know, like I wouldn't just, you know, you have to have some sort of, some sort of reference, right? So we would do some research on you and then talk about, you know, it just wouldn't be that cold, but that's, you know, it's like the elevator pitch in less than, I think it took what, 15 seconds. And, you know, it's, the idea is technically if you didn't pick the phone up, it'd probably be the same message. I hang up and do the next call. Right. So there's a portion of people that are busy. The fact that you're busy is actually good. It means that you prove the point that you haven't done your resume for 5 to 7 years. So I hear you're busy. I'm thinking, okay, this is great because it's exactly the reason that he needs to work with us.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, George. This was fantastic. If people are looking to get in touch, they got questions, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah. So you could just, check me out on LinkedIn, right? So if you just type in George McGarren, which is McGehrin. I mean, if you remotely spell it in any way, it will show up. So that's one way. The second thing is you can just, Instagram is just exec_headhunter. And you can send me a private message and we can hook up.
Perfect. And since we're pulling old school movie references, any relation to Shooter McGarren?
No, zero. Yeah.
I know I've got the last name right or wrong, but it is a stretch. It's worth a shot.
That's cool, man. I appreciate it. Listen, it's always awesome to be with you.
Right on. Thanks for coming on the show, George.
Thanks, man.
See ya. Thanks everybody. See you next week. All right, shout out to Predictable Revenues, Service LinkedIn Outbound, Service for sponsoring this video. As a founder and sales leader myself, I know most of the best practices in terms of like what I need to be doing on LinkedIn, but sometimes I just don't have the time. You know what the right things to do are, but it comes down to a trade-off of where's my time better spent? And can I find somebody to click around on LinkedIn for me and book meetings, you know? And then I can focus on higher level activities. And so think about it. What's the best use of your time? If you're a founder, sales leader, and you have a team, you need some meetings, I'd encourage you to check it out. I'm using it myself. I'm obviously the founder, so eating our own dog food. But if you're curious, click the link below to learn more.